Members, good morning. Welcome at this latest finance meeting on the 30th of November, where we will be dealing with revenue laws referring to the rates and monetary amount amendment bills. There's two of them, and then on the tax laws, the usual two that we get every year. Mr. Rento, are there any apologies? I'm missing people here. No apologies. Okay. These both honorable members appeared in this morning's ATC, so it's within the legal framework and the procedures of Parliament. On the 24th of August, I'll take you back. We had a meeting where we were briefed on the on these bills. One was on the rates bills and the voluntary disclosure program. The other one was jointly with the Standing Committee on Finance on the two tax laws amendment bills. That was on the 24th of August. I also want to take you back, honourable members, to Chapter 4. Of the budget review, because this is where this thing starts, when the minister made the announcement. But what is captured there, honourable members, and that's very important, that over 22 years, South Africa has built one of the most efficient tax authorities in the developing world. The former Minister of Finance, Mr. Nene, said, if we do not achieve growth, revenue will not increase. If revenue does not increase, expenditure cannot be expanded. And then you have a challenge with the depletion of revenue. You must get revenue to divide revenue. Also, what's very interesting is that on Tuesday, a publication called the Tax Stats Bulletin that was launched. And our members must get their fingers into that as well. Either National Treasury and SARS, the joint annual publication. I took 3 points out of it. The tax contributions from small and medium-sized companies was growing strongly as a positive message. Contribution from larger companies declined because of their exposure to the global environment. 60% from South Africa's corporate tax come from just 325 larger companies. The growth in tax collection since 2008-2009 has been faster than the economic growth because of tax hikes and improve compliance. Just to give you some background, welcome to Team Treasury and SARS. We know them very well, and I'm going to give over to Mr. Momoyet that he can that they can brief us on the. We will first take the taxation laws, the two bills, and then after that the rates, the two rates bills. Now, this document we just received. The other one I received last night from Cindy. What I requested also for members, to assist members from Treasury, was the input, the issues raised in the Standing Committee for Finance when they dealt with these four bills, and the Treasury SARS responses to that. Why? Because the Standing Committee had 5 weeks to deal with this, we've got 7 days. That's the reason. And we're not here to just rubber stamp and pass the thing through and say, thank you, we leave. We're not doing that. So we need that information as well. And that's why another date has been set aside for the 7th of December for additional deliberations, that we give our members a full background, not just what we just received, to take an informed decision. Also, when we come to the report, not just a one paragraph, we want a full report on the four bills, because it's for a person who's not a member of this committee reading this to get an understanding what did the MCP do. That one paragraph that the committee considered it and passed it, that's history. We're not going to do it anymore. So that report must be crafted in that way. Treasury, welcome. You can hit the ground running. I know you must leave in 30 minutes to assist the standing committee, I understand.
Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you for us to finally be here. But I don't know, let me just, there's not all members to know. So my name is Islam Mbonya from OMO, Head of Tax and Financial Sector Policy.
SARS Group Executive for Industry Research and Development.
I'm Chris Patterson from National Treasury, Director of Business Income Tax.
It's a bit awkward. It's the first time that I'm in this committee room, so please use the mics. You can take that one.
Okay. So, Chair, I think, I think you started on it by talking about the budget review, because the difficulty, even yesterday as we were writing the speech for the Deputy Minister, we had to remind people that the four bills that the Assembly voted on yesterday, and which are here today before the SECOF, are firstly are the tax proposals of the February budget.
Yes.
So they actually have, when you look at this, it's like, forget about MTPPS, it hasn't happened for the purpose of these bills. Okay. And that's why, Chair, we say to the SCOF that we need to look at the processes, because why are there four bills here? Firstly, there's two sets. The one set is the rates and monetary thresholds, blah, 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 blah. There's two of them. And then there's the tax laws amendment bill and the TALAB, tax laws administration bill. So that's another set. Remember, firstly, they always come in a set of two, because the Constitution defines what a money bill is. So the money bill, in each set there's one money bill. But the Constitution also says that the money bill can't deal with any other substantial issues. So if there's big substantial admin issues, they've got to be put into the admin bills. So that's why they split. But they really are together. You can't read the one without the other. In fact, you shouldn't read either of them, okay? Because if you try and read it, you'll go crazy. That's why we say, And the reason for that, just to remind ourselves, is because these are amendments, it will always be add this, delete that in these, all this legislation. That's why I say you'll go mad if you really try and read it. So unless you like doing that, we won't stop you. But I think that's why what we focus on in the bills is the explanatory memorandum. That is trying to give you in plain English, when we change this clause, that is what we're doing. So you don't have to keep on referring to the bills. And in that sense, the tax bills are different from other legislation. So just so that you know, even some of us, not younger, it's her job to read and get the thing, but we don't focus on the actual wording on the legislation and in the bills, because we're trying to get to what the rationale is for these proposals. So you got the two sets, and the rates bill, now we managed to actually they don't get formally tabled, but to publish them on budget day. So that's why we're saying to Mr. Karim as well, that next time in the 10-day process after the budget, you should have one session at least to deal with the tax proposals. Because otherwise we come to it long after, and if you notice in Parliament, you've already passed the Division of Revenue Act and the Appropriation Act for the main budget. In fact, you're only now looking at the adjustments for those which are from the MTPPS. Yet we're still looking at the basic tax bills. And if, for example, Parliament decides not to pass the rates bill or the TLAP, we will have a crisis. We will have to pay every taxpayer back the extra money we've taken from them, because we've adjusted for inflation. So that's why these bills have to be, it's probably the late, we almost leave it for the last, right at the end of the process. Whereas, as I said, so if Parliament can deal with the rates bills earlier and dispense with it by April, May, that would be great with the rates bills, because the rates bill deals with all the rate changes, the PIT and so on.
The support for rates.
Yeah. So that's the one. The TLAB, of course, deals with all the more complex provisions.
Yes.
And this time it will have the employment tax incentives, the learnerships, the loopholes, all of that. And we'll go give this to you in detail. So these are the two sets. Just bear these in mind, because you are looking at all of this at the same time. And of course, a lot of this year is because of the local government elections. The processes got quite disrupted, the normal process. So that's what we have here today. And what we done today, why, Chair, as you asked, you want to know also what were the issues, the comments.
Yeah.
So we also have the two response documents, which perhaps we should make available to members as well. So you know exactly the documents that we gave out and what was raised. And again, that's a way of make it simpler, I think, just to understand the issues and to say what is Parliament deciding. So we'll give you that as well.
The reason for that
is
when we go back to our constituencies, people ask questions or they invite you to a meeting of business people. That background assists us. Not only this, what we have here. That's the reason. Thank you.
Chair, no thanks. I think that's very useful. So, Chair, so today, and I know there's been a joint sitting on some of these, but we'll assume that, because we know not all members were able to make it. So we're going to start from scratch on these bills, so you have it. So perhaps let's, without much further ado, let's get started.
If we look at our time, yes. That we give you 30 minutes on each bill. Is that enough? 30 to 40 minutes. We start with the tax.
What?
The rates. Well, it doesn't matter.
The older one.
Yeah.
And Chair, just because we take them in sets of two, we're not going to be 30 minutes per bill. It will be 30 minutes perhaps for each set.
Yeah.
So that's only 60 then. And in fact, the rates could be even shorter. So when you deal with the rates bill this time, it deals with the rates, and it deals with the special VDP, which is quite important. And as you know, because time has run out, we said it would be 1st September. That's already started, but it's all dependent on this law being passed. And many taxpayers will only come when they know the law's been passed. Otherwise, there's no certainty. But Yana, do you want to just kick off on the rates bill?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mama. Good morning. The 2016 rates bill deals with the rate changes, and as Mama has said, this year we had a special VDP, hence we've got a rate admin bill. The first bill was released for public comment on with the budget on the 24th of February. So when on the budget day, we also published the rate bill. A second version of the draft was released on the 12th of April, and then we received further comments, and the third version was released on 20th of July. National Treasury and SARS briefed the committee, Standing Committee on Finance, on the 17th of August on the rates bill. And public hearings were held by the Standing Committee on Finance on the 30th of August. National Treasury and SARS briefed the Select Committee on Finance on the revised bills on the 7th of September. And the bills were tabled by the Minister on 26th October 2016. And were voted by SCOF on 24 November and were debated in the National Assembly yesterday, 29th November.
Younger, just to remind members, where the text bills are different because we follow the procedures to amend, is that we always just publish the draft bill, and after we take comments on the draft bill, and then we only table once the bill is almost final, so we can deal with the money rules procedure act provisions. It's quite difficult then to change bills. Not impossible, and we've done it this year in the Tala, but just bear that in mind. So that's why you see the saving date was done with MPPS. And again, that's just a coincidence. I said when the process finished, and we had to wait a month because the plenary wasn't in session.
As Mama said, the rates bill contains monetary adjustments, and this year and the SVDPs, especially this year. And the monetary adjustments that were there in the rates bill this year is the increase in the amount of three personal income tax brackets, the bottom rate, increase in the primary rebate for individuals, inflationary adjustment, additional new top bracket for the transfer duty rate, increase in the value of medical tax credits, inflationary adjustment, increase in the inclusion rate for capital gains tax that was announced in the Chapter 4 of the National Budget Review, increase in the excise duties for alcohol and tobacco, and the introduction of the environmental tire levy. And the next one, the rates bill deals with the special voluntary disclosure program. And I think the main discussions on the rates bill is the special voluntary disclosure program and the tire levy. The SVTP, as we have said earlier, is aimed at providing a further opportunity for non-compliant taxpayers who still have undisclosed assets offshore to voluntarily disclose to SARS their assets before the common reporting standards take off in September 2017. In order to address some of the concerns, we had, as we are saying, that we had revised bills. And in the revised bills, they raised concerns. One of the concerns was that it's too cumbersome, administrative burdensome, so we have to try to make it more simpler. And the other concern was that it's too high, the inclusion rate of 50% is too high, it will limit the uptake. So based on the...
Just explain what the inclusion rate is.
Okay. Based on the concerns that were raised, it now the proposed bill that was tabled moves away from the need to calculate the seed capital, that is the amount that you need to include an investment return as originally proposed, and instead requires one only to calculate one amount to be determined. And then applicants will need to calculate the highest aggregate value of all their assets between 1 March 2010 and 28 February 2015. So that will take your aggregate amount of all the assets between those 6 years that were derived from undeclared income. That is the amount that you need to calculate. And then from that amount, you know, the inclusion rate is that we'll take the 40% of the highest aggregate value of that amount and we include it in your taxable income and you're subject to tax based on your marginal tax rates. So the proposed inclusion rate previously was 50%, but based on the comment stage, they say that it's too high, it will limit the uptake, but you only reduce it to 40%.
But can I just explain? Because what it means is, let's say you identify 1 million rand.
Yes.
Then if it was, the inclusion rate was 50%, it means we only tax you on the 50% of that amount.
Yes.
So now we made it 40%, so
yes.
It means 400,000.
400,000.
And it's on that we'll apply your normal tax rate. So if it was 50%, if you apply 41%, it means we're actually taxing you at half, at 21.5. Because it's only 41% on 50%. The rest is zero.
Yeah. you explained it more simply. Thank you, Mobu.
Yeah, I'm going to excuse myself, if you don't mind, but I'm
in
available.
In his other life, he must become a professor. No,
Art is a better one to get
explained.
Cheers,
Mobu.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mobu. Thank you.
And then, based on the comments we received and coupled with that, we had exemptions. For instance, what we said that although there's an SVDP, but there are certain taxes that will not be fall part of the SVDP. And then that is estate duty and donation tax. So aggregate amounts that we received that made up of the undisclosed aggregate will be exempt from income tax, estate duty, and donation tax. However, those amounts will not be exempt from future donation debt and future estate duty. So now, if you bring in, as Mama has said, if you bring in this 400,000, that 400,000 will be exempt now from estate duty and donation debt, but in future, it will not be exempt. And then as VAT, skills development levy, and UIF will be excluded from the SVDP because we thought that those are not taxes on income. So they will not form part of this. Of the SVDP. And then the second issue that formed too much of discussions during the Standing Committee on Finance was the rate, was the tire levy. The rate bill makes introduction of the tire levy. We must say that the tire levy is not a new levy because it used to be collected by means of a fee through via DIA through REDISA. REDISA is the administrator. Was administering the fee. So what happened is that it came to our attention that this fee, it falls under Section 77. It's a levy, and it has to be collected by through tax process, not as a user charge. So as Section 77 of the Constitution says, every levy tax should be done through the money bill. So what we did this year was that we took the amount of the fee that was collected by REDISA and we put it under money bill. So it's not like a new tax, it's a fee that is what that was already collected, but we are trying to formalize it to make it under a money bill because it is a money bill in terms of Section 77 of the Constitution. So what you are saying here is that we introduced the tire levy and the tire levy will be collected via the customs and excise tax, and it will be collected. In the previous draft, we said that it will be effective from 1 October 2016. But as Mama has said, that due to the fact that we are delaying in finalizing the bill, so we decided to postpone to 1 February 2017. Sorry. Yes, it's 2017. Sorry about that. Because during the public consultation, they were saying that we are taking too long to finalize this and will bring uncertainty to the industry. So we are of the view that the bills will be signed before the next budget. Hence we are saying that we are postponing this from 1 October 2016 to 1 February 2017. And during the comment stage, there was issue regarding the retreaded tires. So in order to address that issue, we said that the retreaded tires will be exempt.
And
some
questions in the SVGP for
The administrative bill, if you have a look at it, is actually a very short and simple one because if we use the existing machinery for the voluntary disclosure program, the permanent voluntary disclosure program, to handle the special one. So we don't create some new mechanism. We use the existing mechanism, but we, on the money bill side, increase the benefit of using the mechanism. And then on the administrative side, there's some points that need to be made. So the key one here is how long do you have to apply for the special one? So we have a permanent one, but what about the special one? So the original proposal was to run it from the 1st of October 2016 through to the 31st of March. And that was criticized in two points. The first was originally we wanted, as Young has mentioned, you to look at all the amounts you hadn't declared in the past, so they could be 10 years old, 20 years old. The amount you hadn't declared, and then we had to look at the investment income you earned on that over the last 5 years. People say, well, that's a huge amount of work. We can't do that in six months. So we've addressed that aspect of it by simplifying and saying, let's just look at the asset value at the end of the period.
So people said, well, that's still too short a period. So the revised bills went out, and after comment, we thought, well, okay, let's push it out until the 30th of June. So now you have 9 months to come forward. And people were still uncomfortable and said, well, no, we need more time still. And so the final version, after the select committee proposed an amendment, takes it through to the 31st of August of 2017. Now,
what's the reason for asking more time for what?
So people are saying this is very complicated stuff, the money is offshore, it's quite expensive to get the records, and the other point that we should bear in mind at the point Momo did make a little bit earlier is, given that the legislation hasn't been promulgated yet, although officially it opened on the 1st of October and we have had people apply, and those are the people who are, I suspect, a little worried that we're close to them. A lot of people aren't going to apply until the law is in place. And in realistically speaking, that's only going to be in January. So we have, if you think about it, lost the first 3 months of our original window period. So that's one of the reasons you need to push it out. And then the other reason is the complexities that have been put on the table. The reason you can't go later than the 31st of August is because automatic exchange of information starts in September next year. And once the automatic exchange has started, well, you're probably not going to be telling us anything in your voluntary disclosure application that we don't know already. So you can't run over that period. So 31st of August is, if you look at the wording of the media, of the joint statement by what are known as the early adopters, that are the countries that are first introducing automatic exchange, it says that the first exchange of information will take place by the end of September 2017. Now, that realistically means most of it's going to happen in September of 2017, and so you need to cut off August so that you don't have this overlap problem. What the admin bill also points out is that you're not going to get any penalties for coming forward. So that obviously is a sweetener for coming forward in terms of the voluntary disclosure. And SARS isn't going to try and pursue a criminal prosecution about the fact that you're a tax evader, because you have now come clean. Obviously, if this is tax that was evaded on drug dealing money or something like that, that doesn't immunize you from the underlying offense, and you can still be prosecuted for that. But if all that is an issue here is a tax issue, then SARS is not pursuing that. And then finally, a change which is again proposed by the Standing Committee is a formal reporting provision which is inserted, so that there is effectively now an annual report on the progress of the program. You could argue whether that was strictly speaking necessary or not, because there is an existing reporting provision, but for good order, it is there now in this particular piece of legislation. And that sort of covers what's in the admin bill.
So this is the package. All the members, questions? I repeat my request that Treasury supply us with the issues and responses, just to give us that we are better informed about the process that was undertaken in the Standing Committee. Are there any questions on these two bills? I think it's very straightforward. None?
Just maybe one thing.
Well,
thank you, Chairperson. The tire, let's call it tax. So you are saying that there's no increase or whatever, there is an existing tax already, but it's just a different method of collecting it, and you just wanted to bring it under the umbrella of this law. Is that a correct assessment of that?
Yes.
Thank you.
That is the correct assessment. Yes, it was a fee, but done by Redisa. But when we look at it, it falls under Section 77 because as a levy, so it has to be done through tax collection by the Minister of Finance under the Money Bill. So we are transferring it from there to the Money Bill process. It's still 230 a kilo, the same fee that was determined. No, there's no increase.
Thank you, Chairman.
What progress is there with the sugar tax? We were fortunate to visit Mexico. And there was also a lot of noise, but they implemented.
With regard to the sugar tax, we issued a paper, and we've had public consultations about 2 weeks ago. So we are in the process. We are doing public hearings, and then it will be implemented through the formal process of the either the excise tax or the income tax.
You are conducting your
own. We are conducting a public hearing. But as Mama has said, he was of the view that maybe beginning next year we have to brief the committee.
I think so. Yes, I believe that will be better for the system. All the members, are you satisfied with these two bills? That's it. Thank you. You're going through this like the blue train, yeah?
Sorry, if I may quickly.
Yes, you're welcome.
Just on the rates, ending of the assessment period for individuals. For individuals, that's all moved out to 20%. The new rule. This is on, I think it's B19.
Yes.
On the, if I'm correct, if my memory serves me correct, it used to be for individuals.
No.
There was a change. I read something about up to the end, moved out to the end of February. The individuals. If you can just enlighten me.
All right. So the rates changes that we're making here relate to the year of assessment ending in February 2017. But we're in that year already.
Okay,
so that's why Mama made the point. For example, Parliament, would you reject these changes and have an immediate impact on revenue because that's what we're collecting. So, and the individual tax here has always run, well, I can't say always, as long as I can remember, run from the 1st of March through to the end of February. So what we do have are different submission dates for filing your return. So classically there always used to be one date. Then we had a change once e-filing came into the picture and we now have 3 dates. So we have the first date which is for people who are filing manually and that's quite early and there's a very, very small number of people doing that. Then we have the close of the filing season for people who e-file. That is in November. So that closed last Friday. And so that is for people who either e-file from their own PC or their work PC or wherever, or come into a SARS branch and e-file, and that's the vast majority of people. And then we have a third set of people who are the provisional taxpayers who have slightly more complicated affairs, and they are at the end of January. So those are the 3 dates. But to get the end of January, you also have to file electronically.
Yes.
So if you happen to be a provisional taxpayer who wants to file manually, you have a problem because it's quite an early cutoff. But if you're the kind of sophisticated person who is probably in the provisional taxpayer space, you either have access to a PC, own a PC, or if you're right at the top end, you have an advisor who's doing this all for you anyway, so that shouldn't be a big issue. So I have one.
Thank you, Justice.
You happy? Any other questions? None? Franz, you're with you. Please proceed. The next one.
The next bill is the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill and the Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill.
Yeah.
This bill deals with more administrative...
That's it.
tax proposals that are announced in both Annex Chapter 3 and Chapter 4.
Yeah.
As you have said, in terms of the consultations, the bill was first published for public comment on the 8th of July, and National Treasury and SARS briefed the committees on the 24th of August on the bill. And then on the 14th of September, the committee had public hearings on the bill, and on 21 September, we presented a draft response document to the committee. And the response document are available. We've given them to Cindy, but they are also available on our website. Sorry, but Cindy is going to give them to you. And then a second batch of the 2016 TLEB was released for public comment on the 25th of September. The second batch had learnership and employment health incentives. And the reason why we had to publish it later, we have to finish the study, the review. Because they were coming to the end of the year and said that we're going to do a review before we can see that any other amendments are required and what type of those amendments are required to be made. So we could not publish it on the 8th of July. We published it on the 25th of September after the study was done. And the second batch has the learnership and ETI proposal. And National Treasury and SARS briefed the Standing Committee on the second batch on the 11th of October. And the 26th of October, the bill was tabled by the Minister in the National Assembly. On the 9th of November, the Standing Committee on Finance held public hearings on the second batch, mostly on ETI and learnership. And on the 15th of November, we did a response to the committee. And the Standing Committee voted on the TLEB and TALAB on the 24th of November. Yesterday it was debated in Parliament and today we are here. As you have said, the bill contains the key issues to the bill that we're going to discuss. As you have said, that what are the key issues that were discussed in the Standing Committee on Finance. We're going to focus on those issues that we discussed there. And also the learnership and employment tax incentive. And Chris? Chris will take us through the employment tax incentive and learnership.
So the employment tax incentive, I remember briefing this committee a number of times before we introduced it in 2014, but it did come in 1 January 2014 and it's been going for since then. We did a review, it was set to expire at the end of this year. So 31 December 2016, the incentive would have just ceased unless we made a change. It's the way we would like to do incentives going forward, where we set a sunset date. So in effect, it forces us to review to see whether it's working. This is a use of taxpayers' money, so we need to be sure that we are using taxpayers' money wisely by giving these reliefs. We did a review. We actually have done a lot of research on this, far more than we do for many incentives. We led a task team within NEDLAC, and we put a number of research papers together. We put a very long descriptive report together that breaks down the claims from the incentive by sector, by age, by size of firm, and a variety of other measures that we published on our website, and I can pass on to the committee. And then we discussed it within NEDLAC with business and labour. We didn't come to a full consensus agreement within NEDLAC. We proposed an extension for 2 years to say that we could then gather additional data, and we already think that the incentive from the research we had seen is creating employment. So we think it is doing what it is needed to do. It's creating employment for the youth. The research seemed to show that this was true and that there was very minimal negative consequences from the incentive. Business agreed or supported a 2-year extension. Some parts of Labour also supported it, but one part of Labour disagreed that the incentive should be allowed to be claimed for Labour brokers. And the main issue there was that they felt National Treasury and government should restrict the incentive from Labour brokers. We had long discussions with Standing Committee and in public hearings on this matter. We felt it would have been difficult to exclude them for Labour brokers. Our position was, if there is something if there is a characteristic of employment that we think we shouldn't be incentivizing, we need to target that. Whether the firm is called a labor broker, or if it's called a retailer, or if it's called whatever, you know, we felt we needed to target what the problem is. So we've had discussions with Kosatu on this, and we are still thinking about ideas, and they still need to engage with us on what exactly the problems with the type of labor position is in firms that we shouldn't incentivize. We believe that we've actually been working with the Department of Labor as well, and we believe that a lot of the labor relations legislation should be driven through the Department of Labor. And they came to present to the Standing Committee on Finance, Department of Labor, and they agreed with that view. They thought it really is their domain. If there are potential adverse employment environments or adverse employment outcomes, then they must deal with it through the labor relations legislation. That's where we are. The Standing Committee felt that there should be an extension. We had initially put in a cap of 20 million on the incentive. We were worried about the fiscal position. And there were, from the research that we had done, you could clearly see that there were job gains amongst smaller firms, but then it was more difficult to see job gains amongst the very large firms. Now, just because it was difficult to see it doesn't mean it was there. It wasn't there. It was just that our methodology that we use is very difficult to tell with large firms whether there is additional employment. The way we tell whether there's additional employment for smaller firms is you, in effect, compare firms to each other. So you compare a firm who didn't take the incentive to a firm who did take the incentive, and you see whether the firm who did take the incentive created more employment or not. And for smaller firms, you can clearly see that they did create more employment if they took the incentive. For larger firms, the problem is almost all the large firms took the incentive. So there was no way, there was nobody to compare to. And there are very few companies to compare to. And then we have problems with sample sizes, it's too small. So it's just very difficult to determine that. And what I mentioned before is that even if the problem is you need to try and take out the effects of the economy in all of this. So if the economy is doing terribly and everybody is decreasing employment, the incentives could still be working if some firms are decreasing employment less than they would have. And so it's been quite difficult, and we've been working with professors to try and evaluate the impact. And a lot of those papers will get published next year. But the preliminary research does suggest it's having a positive impact, which is why we're going for it. But with the 20 million cap, because there wasn't this evidence that large firms had created employment, and we worried about the fiscal position we put it in, it was strongly argued to us and to the committee that this would have a potentially negative impact on employment. So if we put in a cap, and in the large firms who had created jobs now can't claim the incentive, that they might get rid of jobs. And I think we were persuaded by that argument, and we've agreed to remove the cap, which is why we had to do a bill so that we could amend the bill that was tabled in the National Assembly to remove the cap. We've also made some small changes on the administration. On the learnership tax incentive, it was set to expire for learnership agreements that were entered into after 1 October 2016. So if you had entered into a learnership agreement before 1 October, and even if the learnership agreement extended past 1 October, you could still claim for that agreement. So even if you entered into a learnership agreement for 3 years, and you entered into at the beginning of this year, you could still claim for the next 3 years. But it was supposed to end for any learnership agreements after 1 October. We also did a review on that, and we published the review on our website, which again I can pass on to the committee. Yanga, with the other response documents, we'll pass it on. But it does seem to show that the incentive is creating a lot of opportunity for training. It was more difficult to tell whether the prospects of those individuals have improved dramatically over time. We need to get a bit more data, and we've changed some of the way that we are now collecting that data. We're going to make it compulsory for firms to tell us exactly who the incentive, the learnership incentive was claimed for, so that we can track them over time and see if they're doing better than others. But there, given the skills crisis and given the need for a dramatically improved skills development to drive the economy forward, we think that this incentive is an important part of the process of creating an economy that can meet the need and compete globally. We suggested that there is an extension of the learnership incentive for another 5 years, but we've also slightly changed the value of the incentive. We want to use taxpayers' money wisely in these incentives. For some of the individuals who have a qualification of NQF level 7 and above, we felt that those individuals have already got good qualifications and they are likely to get employment and to succeed in their careers. So we've decreased the value of the incentive from 30,000 to 20,000 for those individuals. For individuals with lower levels of qualification, NQF levels 1 to 6, we've increased the value of the incentive from 30 to 40,000, because those are the people we want to target. Those are the people who don't have skills that we need to provide an incentive for employers to put them onto learnership agreements and apprenticeship agreements in order to get those skills.
Excuse me, in your information you're going to pass on to us, what was the success rate, what was the outcome since the implementation?
So,
how did this enhance employment?
So in the report that we can show you how much was claimed by the different types of firms, by the different sectors. You can see that the majority of claims were in the manufacturing sectors and the finance and retail sectors. We can see that the claims were about, the incentive was costing us around about $1 billion per year, could be a little bit higher. And then you get an additional double up of the incentive in effect if you complete a learnership agreement. So in that report we can show you the breakdown between learnership agreements where people are claiming each year and learnership agreements which have actually been completed. And then that will show that those people now have an additional qualification, they've got an additional certificate. I can't remember the exact breakdown, but it's in the report. So that was why we proposed an extension. It was welcomed by Labour, by business, that there is an extension of this learnership tax incentive. It really does help with skills development. There was some pushback on lowering the level of the incentive for those with higher qualifications, but we believe it is justified going forward.
Okay. The next issue on the TLAB is the alignment of the tax charging provisions to enable the Minister of Finance to change the tax rates in all the tax acts. In this 2016 TLAB, there are amendments whereby the Minister is aligning all the tax charging provisions of all the tax acts. And it makes provision for the Minister to make changes based on the rates announced by the Minister of Finance in the annual budget, but subject to Parliament passing the legislation. So the rates, the Minister will announce maybe in February that the rates will change like what we had last year, increasing of the PIT from 40 to 41% from the date of the announcement, but subject to Parliament passing the legislation. So we have similar provisions available in the fourth schedule of the Income Tax Act, that is for the personal income taxes, as well as the Customs and Excise Act. But we did not have similar provisions in other tax acts, so we are aligning all the provisions. During the public hearings, taxpayers and commentators wanted to check the constitutionality of this, and then we did get an opinion from the state law advisor, of which is submitted to the Standing Committee on Finance on this provision. So they said that it's fine, because we are saying subject to Parliament make the changes. So if the legislation has not is not been, has not been passed by Parliament, then it will be reversed. The next one is the one of the bigger amendments we had in the 2016 draft TILA, introducing measures to prevent tax avoidance through the use of trust. The proposed amendment is an anti-avoidance measure whereby we want to limit the avoidance of estate duty and donation tax by transferring wealth into a trust. So what we are doing here, we're saying that what happens is that taxpayers will transfer their wealth without paying donation tax and estate duty. So we're trying to limit that. So what we had in the earlier versions of the bill, the one that was introduced on the 8th of July in debate and public hearing, was that we said that if you transfer a loan to a trust, the interest, an interest-free loan to a trust, the interest foregone will be regarded as income. So during the public hearing, they said that you are using a wrong instrument. We have to do other means. So what we are saying now, is on the next slide, when we made changes after the response document, as you can see on the response document, so we said that the interest foregone will be regarded as a donation, and it will be deemed to be a donation. And then during the public hearing, they said that there are many things that a trust is used for, and in transferring assets to a trust, it's not only to avoid donations, definitely estate duty. So in taking into account those factors that they raised during the public hearing, which is in the response document, we introduced further exemption to this legislation. For instance, special trusts that are created solely for the benefit of minors with disability will not form part of this section. Trusts that are created are regarded as public benefit organization approved by the commissioner will not fall under this. Vesting trust whereby the interest of a beneficiary are clearly distinguished in the trust will not form part of this, because they say that they are used that as trading trust. And then loan used by trust to acquire primary residence will not fall part of this. So we created a lot of exemption to take in based on the comments received from taxpayers. So those comments are clearly stated in the response document. The next one, please. The next big proposal in the 2016 TILAB was addressing the circumvention of rules dealing with employee-based share incentive schemes. What happens is that it's normally happening with bigger companies, the private companies, and this is not targeting at broad-based employee share schemes. It's targeting at employee share schemes whereby if you are a director or a CEO, you'll have shares in a company, and then you get dividends. What we have seen, the schemes that they create is that you'll have shares in that company, and those shares will never vest to you. You'll always receive dividends, and then they create schemes whereby the reason why they want you to receive dividends is that dividends are taxed at the rate of 15% as opposed to income, which is taxed at the rate of 41%. On the earlier version of the bill that we published on the 8th of July, we said any income received will be regarded as remuneration. So during the public hearings, they said that no, this is wrong, because some of the schemes are not meant for the anti-avoidance. So we should place this the anti-avoidance measure and target those schemes, not every employee share ownership scheme. So what we are doing now in the revised bill is that we're gonna address some of the concerns raised during the public hearings, and the bill will only target the measures that deal adequately with the schemes whereby the restricted shares held by the employees are mainly for anti-avoidance. However, we said in the response document that this is still a matter of concern for us, but the time was too short this year. Next year, we still need to look at this holistically, even if we're going to change it in 2018, but we need to look at this holistically because it's a big anti-avoidance measure. That is in the response document. The next one is addressing double non-taxation arising from cross-border hybrid debt instruments. This was a proposal which was on Chapter 4 of the budget. It goes with the BEPS issue. And BEPS has one of the pillars is hybrid debt instruments, one of the action points of BEPS. And because South Africa, we are part of the G20 and OECD BEPS project, so we keep on looking at our legislation to see if they are in line with what the BEPS is proposing. although we had this legislation in the 2013 when it was first introduced, we find that taxpayers now have created schemes whereby if it's non-resident and a resident, they create schemes whereby they want to characterize dividends as interest, because if you reclassify dividends as interest, the interest will be tax deductible. And BEPS is looking at this closely because interest will be tax deductible from this side, and you find that it's not taxable on the person who is receiving the interest in another country. So what we are doing here, we are trying to do the cut only from the South African side to stop this arbitrage, to say that the current anti avoidance measures are going to apply only to South African residents. They're not going to apply to non-residents, so as to stop this arbitrage. And the next one, which is the subject of discussion, which of which is still ongoing as from 2015, is the tax treatment of long-term insurance due to the introduction of SEM. We had this amendment last year, and Parliament said that we should go back and further discuss. What is happening is that the new Insurance Act is changing the regulatory framework for long-term insurance and also for the short-term insurance. So the way they do the reporting now will change based on the new Insurance Act. The new Insurance Act, at least we are lucky because it's not yet signed. So it gives us more time to make the changes if we do not address the issues, to make changes again. So we proposed changes last year, and Parliament said that you should go back to the long-term insurers because they made public hearings. We withdraw the last year, some of the last year's amendments. So even this year, we made changes. And on the 9th of November, the SEM task group, which is the group that is formed by FSB for the long-term to look at this, made presentations in the Standing Committee on Finance. And on the 14th of November, Treasury, Parliament said that we should meet with this group because clearly they are unhappy. So we met with them. But what we discovered is that we had an explanatory memorandum, as Momo has said, that the explanatory memorandum clarifies things in a simpler manner. So they understand the explanatory memorandum. But Parliament said that we said to them that if there are other issues of technical corrections, we're not going to change them this year. We're going to meet with them again next year, and maybe they can suggest some of the changes, and then we can change in the 2017 legislative cycle. And as we have said, that at least the Insurance Act is not signed into law, so it gives us time to make the changes. So if it may be signed in the middle of next year, maybe we'll make changes retrospectively from the date of which it came into effect. The next one is providing relief for mining companies spending infrastructure for the benefit of mining communities. We are doing this because the requirements of the MPRDA, it's compulsory for the mining companies to submit social and labor plans.
Yeah.
And these social and labor plans is for the mining communities, infrastructure, creations, roads, and schools. We found that now the current Income Tax Act makes provision for the miners to have deductions, that is the mining companies, only if they build those schools for the employees, but not for the community. So to further assist now the mining companies, because this is the requirement of the MPRDA, we are saying that if you submit a social and labor plan which requires you to do the infrastructure for the community, so you'll be eligible for the tax deduction.
Like Tom says, the creation on it to pay.
Yes. The next one, which was also the subject of discussion, of which the Standing Committee said we should look at it, is the employer-provided bursaries for employees and relatives. Currently, the Income Tax Act makes provision for bursaries and scholarship granted to employers and to the relatives of the qualifying employees to be exempt, but we have monetary limits. And the reason why we have monetary limits is the anti-avoidance measure, because we want to stop abuse, because we do not want maybe the employees, the children or the relatives of the CEO, of which they are already at the upper scale, to be, it's not like to be benefiting, but we want to have measures to stop the abuse, because we are doing this for those who cannot be able to further the education. So what the committee said, because of the educational crisis in the country, and we should consider looking at this limit. And then in the 2016 TLAB, the monetary limit in respect of remuneration for qualifying employees was increased from 250 to 400,000. That's what we have done this year. So the committee said we should consider looking at this maybe to increase that monetary limit. But you said we still need to do some research so as to see, because our income tax is progressive. If you have money, the more you have money, the more you pay. The more you have money, the more you cannot get the exemption. So we have to look at the 400,000. But if you feel that the 400,000 is still okay, then we're going to tell the committee. And then the amount of the bursaries from grade R to 12 was increased from 10,000 to 15,000. And the exempt bursaries and scholarships, the amount was increased from 30,000 to 40,000. As you have said that these are monetary limits, normally change is made every second year or every third year, but you're going to look at it. That's all from the team.
Well, that then pushes it back over to me. And so if we just have a look at the, some of the key issues that, that are here, we begin with value-added tax. And in order to, the way that that system works is I as a supplier will charge the ordinary citizen sitting around this table VAT, and I will then deduct the VAT I paid to my suppliers, and I will pay the net amount over to SARS. So if you think about how that works, sometimes I may have paid more VAT than I charged the people I sold to, in which case I get a refund from SARS. So with that as background, you can see it's very important that the invoices the supplier has are quite solid, so that if SARS comes to do an audit, we can check that those are valid VAT invoices, that you in fact did pay the VAT over to your suppliers and that it really was VAT. And so there's some fairly strict requirements in the VAT Act as to what those invoices have got to have in them before they can be called tax invoices and then used in the VAT system to claim that input. Now the problem is sometimes you have a supplier to you who doesn't meet those requirements. And if that invoice doesn't meet the requirements, you can't claim the input. And so you're a bit stuck because you paid the VAT, but your supplier won't give you the proper invoice for it. And so you can obviously push the supplier, you can work with them to try and get it right, but sometimes, no matter what you do, you're stuck in the middle, and that supplier won't fix it for you. So what happens then? Well, what happens then is what's proposed here, is we create a rulings process where you can come to SARS and show that as a last, you've done everything you possibly can to solve the problem, but you can't get it fixed. Then you can come to SARS, and if you can prove to us that, in fact, you did pay the VAT, then we will say, that's okay, you can rely on the document that you currently have, even though it doesn't meet all the proper requirements. And that has to be a last resort, because you don't want this to become the new normal, which is why we have a rulings process that we're proposing, so that we can keep control, and we can obviously then also see who these suppliers are that are not sticking to the rules, and then we can go and talk to them too. And hopefully if SARS talks to them, that has more impact than if just their customers talk. So that's the first one. The second one is... you have a 5-year window period to claim your refunds from SARS. But because of the interaction of the Tax Administration Act and the Value Added Tax Act amendments, a question has arisen as to whether that also applies if you have a late return. So if I put my return in more than 5 years late, does that also apply to me? And the answer is, yes, it should, because why should someone who's never put a return in be better off than somebody who has put a return in? So that 5-year rule should apply consistently, and we're making it clear that it does. So then we get to, we've been talking about the MPRDA, and here we talk about the mineral and petroleum resources royalty that is paid. There is a system in that act for paying as provisional amounts. We also have provisional payments in the normal income tax system, so it makes sense to align them as closely as we can, which is what we've been doing here. So there are a set of amendments in the bill which essentially get even closer alignment with the income tax provisional tax system so that we can reuse systems and automate more effectively. And also, we've taken the opportunity to take this act and update it for the fact that there is now a tax administration act, and so it doesn't have to deal with a bunch of things that it still deals with. There's a better place for that to all happen. Something that did come up in the comment period is in our initial draft, we proposed that the final return should come in within 6 months after the end of the year. The mining companies were quite uncomfortable with that. They pointed out that their tax return only needs to, income tax return only needs to be in after a year. And this is at least as complicated as that, because it takes several pieces of information out of your financials and works with them, just as the income tax return does. And so we've left this at 12 months rather than trying to shorten it down to 6. So that came out of public comment. And then the last set of big changes that we're talking about here relate to the tax ombud. So internationally, there are two main models for an ombud. The one is one that is associated with the revenue service, and that would be, the examples there would be the UK, Canada, the US, or you can have one that is associated with the equivalent of the Public Protector's Office, and there you would look at Sweden, Botswana, and some other countries. The reason you do that is because normally a tax ombud is quite a small office. To try and have it standing all on its own is a bit inefficient because there's a lot of duplication. So it's useful to piggyback it onto something else. In South Africa, we followed the first model. We didn't use the UK example, which is what the Cass Commission originally recommended. We moved in the direction of the Canadian example, because that's another constitutional democracy. But we've obviously tweaked it because our constitution and system is a little different from Canada's. So we have a tax ombud. It's been in operation for a couple of years now, back 3 to be more accurate, so we just had the renewal of the tax ombuds term. And after that initial period, we sat down with the tax ombud and the office of the tax ombud, and we said, right, what needs to change? And so a number of amendments were proposed to make the ombuds office more obviously independent. I tell you, it's already independent if you look at the number of times it fines in taxpayers' favour compared to SARS's. It fines in taxpayers' favour more than 80% of the time, so I think that already demonstrates independence. So the first thing we're doing is proposing the extension of the tax ombuds term from 3 years to 5 years, to give the ombuds a better chance to settle in. The staff. Currently, the model is that SARS seconds the staff at the ombuds request, after consultation with the or in consultation with the commissioner. The new model is that the tax ombud will appoint directly in terms of the SARS Act. So we do away with the concept of consultation with the commissioner and secondments. The officer's expenditure will now be from a budget approved by the minister, which makes it clear that they have their own sort of funding there. Mandate. Currently, if the ombud wants to investigate a systemic issue, in other words, a broad issue, that's coming from complaints. But the ombud pointed out that sometimes they hear about things that people aren't complaining about. Maybe they're attending a conference and they hear there's an issue. So what happens then? So what happens then is that extension to the mandate, which says that if the minister requests the ombuds office, or if the ombuds office says, we have heard something, minister, can we look into it? The minister says yes, they can look into it. So they don't have to always wait for complaints, they can move more proactively. And then finally, so that the ombud knows why people aren't agreeing with him or her, if they're not agreeing, if you don't agree with the ombuds recommendation, then you need to tell the ombud why within 30 days. So if you're a taxpayer, you say, no, I disagree, you need to tell the ombud why I disagree because, and then the ombud can learn or come to the conclusion the taxpayer is wrong. And the same for SARS. If SARS doesn't agree with the ombud's recommendation, we need to tell them why. And again, they can either say, okay, that makes sense, or no, it doesn't, and it's going into our report to the minister and to Parliament. And I think that is the last slide.
Honourable members, there you've got it. Questions, Honourable Gaylor?
No, it's not really a question, but...
What we dealt here is affecting every one of us, sitting around this table.
The value-added tax, that will assist a small business. Happy that you're looking to that one, because that has been destroying the small sector, because sometimes they do not get their invoices in time. However, some of them have incurred penalties because of this problem that you've now identified and are resolving. Is there any assistance that you can give to them? Because I know some of them have got a major problem, but maybe that you've looked into and you're addressing the scene. But because of not getting the invoices, some of them have incurred penalties and all that. Thank you.
Anyone else? You want to react to that?
Right, so this is something that goes forward. We've had a slightly different system, which was not rulings based for the last year or so, if I remember correctly. So there has been an attempt to assist. This is a more controlled attempt. The reason someone would be penalized is not because they don't have the invoice. The reason they're being penalized is because they're claiming it even though they don't have the invoice. So the law says you can't claim it if you don't have the invoice. And someone then took the decision, well, I'm going to claim it anyway, and that's why the penalty is there. So it's a bit difficult to go back and help them, but this should be able to help going forward. As long as, and this is probably an important point to make when you talk to people, as long as they go and get that ruling, all right? Because it's still not going to help you if you take that decision, well, I know this piece, I don't have the right invoice, but I'm going to claim it anyway, and that's all you do. If, on the other hand, you say, oh, I've got this piece of paper, it doesn't meet the requirements, the supplier won't help me, I can go to SARS for help. And if you follow that process, then you're good. If you decide to short-circuit and say, well, I hope SARS is never going to audit me and I'll claim it anyway, you're still going to have a problem.
Yeah. The main thing is just, please comply. Then you won't have any hiccups or problems. Any more questions from the members? This is a four bills in two packages. Our next meeting to deliberate on this, as well as a report, will be on the 7th of December. And then it will go to the House on the afternoon, if I'm correct. On Motara, the afternoon, the plenary, 8 December, 2 o'clock. Where we will be, where the NCP will then consider the bills. The PBO, if members remember when we had the joint briefing by the PBO on the MTBBS, PBO were also requested to do a VAT study in anticipation of an increase through the height, etc. We are awaiting that. And I will propose that, and I spoke to Honorable Karim, that we do a joint meeting on this matter of that. In addition to that we also, and if we look at the program for the first term 2017, I think it's crucial that we have an engagement of the members with the Judge Davis on the tax committee to come and brief us. I know he briefed the standing committee, or they dealt with him, I can't remember which month, but we are a bit behind that we get that information as well by Jeff Davies. And then also, we spoke about this, but it couldn't be implemented because of 4 weeks we lost as Parliament, referring to the election, local government elections, is an engagement with the Reserve Bank, again with the Treasury,
including the PBO, on fiscal policy, monetary policy, and economic growth. I think we can do that visit. I don't think so. We must go to the Reserve Bank. I've got fantastic facilities and engage there with the bank, with National Treasury and SARS, etc. regarding this. Team Treasury, thank you very much. Are there anything else you want to tell us? Let's hope and pray that we can increase the revenue, because then we can address more priorities. That's a reality we are facing, to improve the lives of our people. My province is very grateful for the Division of Revenue Management Bill, the allocations for budgetary education, school nutrition, 25 million for drought relief, 74,000 for NHI. Yes. If you look at the size of the Northern Cape, and the budget it's working with. So thank you for for honoring this meeting, for the briefing. We have still got some housekeeping to do, the minutes, but you are released. Thank you very much. Yeah. Honourable members, yes, one set of minutes. Yeah. Of the 22nd of February. Ah, not February, man. Yes, sir. The 22nd of November. I'm in 2017 already, sorry. the 22nd of November 2016. The matters we addressed was the consideration of the draft report on the provincial treasuries and tabling of the report on the Mexico study tour and the consideration of minutes. I put the honourable members page 1. Those present, apology absent. Yeah, the DFF haven't yet replaced Mr. Mbeleni. Page 2. On Wilson Monday, is the minute sent in braille to you?
Yes, I do read
that. No, it's not about reading. I just said Parliament is doing what it's supposed to do because you raised the matter with Advocate Pandela. When the briefing was done about taking Parliament to the people, that thing came back to me a few times. It's a very important point because you must get what you must be supplied with the correct information in the correct way. Page 2, honorable members. Yeah, on page 2.1, the second paragraph, we're still waiting for the responses from the people with that responsibility. We haven't received it yet, but I'll take it up in the next chairperson's meeting. Page 3. I'm still waiting on the members for the letter because I must table the letter in a management meeting. I must table the letter in a formal committee meeting. That's procedure.
Yeah.
No, until today I haven't received it. Yeah. I've just spoken to
so probably what happened in next year.
Well, yeah, it won't happen this year. No, it won't happen this year. I spoke to the Deputy Director General, Mrs. Mala Cheng, regarding this matter, and I requested her to phone the MEC and send me an email to clarify a few things because they were uncertain in the poll, and that's where I left it. But I'm waiting for a written letter. Page 3, honorable members. And page 4. as referrals to us that will have to be incorporated into our first term program 2017. There will be a program meeting, I think, next week before we leave Cape Town for the summer recess, that we have a joint management meeting just to draft, our first term program. Honourable members, I put to you the minutes of the 22nd of November 2016. Honourable Gaylor.
I move for the adoption.
You move for the adoption. A seconder. Honourable Tablan seconds. There's only one set of minutes. That concludes the minutes, honourable members. Honourable Motara, are there any announcements from the Whipri side? Things happen through the night these days.
The confirmation of the changes will be sent directly to members, but I indicated yesterday that if they follow the committee program, the two committee programs, it will assist understanding the changes in the program. We have not yet had a programming committee. So just to highlight, today we have a plenary at 2. The committee meets again on Friday morning at 9. Is it at 9?
Yeah. But there's tomorrow a joint meeting with the strength.
Yes.
Briefing or what?
Friday joint meeting.
No. Tomorrow, immediately after
that's
I'm not sure of the time, but tomorrow there's a joint.
After caucus.
Yeah, it will be after 12:30.
Yeah.
It's a joint meeting with the
Standing
Committee on Appropriations.
Yes.
Friday, the committee meets for public hearing.
Yes.
On Tuesday.
Tuesday
is the 6th. Yes. Is it the committee that meets?
I know finance is a Wednesday. I think I'm not.
Just give me a second.
I'm speaking under direction now. Let me just see here.
Just give me a second, Chair, and I'll get it. Why? When are you meeting? Tuesday.
Yeah, I remember you received SMSs and emails and...
Yeah, it was sent, Chair. It's just a joint, the consolidated or the revised program.
Yeah.
We got it from, I think it was from Estelle. I just can't find it now. But Wednesday, then the plenary will sit on Wednesday. And that's to pass the appropriations bill. Thursday, the committee meets again. I'm not sure of the time. And Friday is the division of revenue amendment bill. It's early on Fridays at 9.
Yeah.
Wednesday is at our normal time.
Not 10.
No, at 9. Thank you.
All the members, please, we call on your commitment to be present at these meetings. I know we are under pressure, but that's our responsibility. The good news is you will be on the road 2 o'clock the 9th of December now. So, And I've got no intention to... for finance to sit on the 11th or 12th or 13th of December. All the members, lunch has been ordered. It will be delivered now, so don't leave, otherwise it's wasteful expenditure. Let we also enjoy that. This brings us to the end of this meeting. Obamai, is there anything you want to announce or as we are together? No, we're looking forward to the report this afternoon in the House. Yes, and then there's another debate, condolences on about Comrade Kasseru's death. This meeting is then adjourned. Thank you, honourable members. Just about the report, Jolani was out. I just want to repeat that we get a full report, not just one paragraph on each bill. let us give substance to our report. If someone outside this committee reads our report, it can be captured in the way this presentation is done as well. Thank you. Enjoy your lunch.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Meeting finished, eh? Huh? Meeting finished.
Finished.
So,
it was
one.
Can you make it?
When you're trying to make sure.
Okay, now just write it down here. Okay, cool. Simple fun. Yes. I feel like I'm floundering around something. And then I come in, I'm in the wrong place, or I've got the wrong phone.
No.
Thank you so much for
helping.
I really appreciate
it. It's okay, I will keep you.